This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and this is a second part of a show that I did last week on getting into the beaver business and thinking about that, customers and how to charge and all that. I'm not going to go back through all that. So if you did not hear last week's show and that's of interest to you, I would go back to last week's show and listen to that probably before you continue to listen to this show, because we're not going to back up. We're going to keep going forward. Now, before we get started in the show, I've had a request, and I'm not sure how pertinent it is. I talk a lot about permaculture, guys, because it's important to me. But I have an Instagram account that is for permaculture. And it's kind of leads into what we're going to be talking about today, especially towards the end. That Instagram account is not about me and Cindy being on vacation or me trapping coyotes or me doing anything like that. That is a brand building account that allows me to reach a lot of different people that I would never meet and maybe get them interested in some stuff I'm gonna be doing in the future for permaculture in my backyard nursery and local stuff here around Chattanooga as far as the nursery and things like that. It's very targeted just for that. So I've noticed a lot of trappers have got on there and have been signing up, and I know there's been some confusion, but that is not about trapping. Not ashamed of trapping. Trapping's actually very, very permaculture when I think about it, and that's some of the stuff I'm going to be going in, is trying to cross lines between practical and just, you know, purple breathing hippie type stuff that a lot of people fall into. And that's kind of one of the educational missions I've got on permaculture, because it is so practical. But one of the trappers on there saw some of the stuff, and it's Clint_Locklear at Instagram, I believe is how you get to the account. But it's small letters, Clint_Locklear. And I'm showing a lot of the stuff that I grow here. And I had a trapper, you know, saying that I mentioned permaculture on here a lot, and just maybe introduce the garden or why I do it. Guys, there's a lot of reasons that I do the garden, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this before we get to the regular part of the show, but this was requested. One is food security, because I'm trying to strive to find ways not to outsource everything of my life to other people, which is why I think everybody should have a business. So we're growing all kind of fruit and vegetables, and I'm talking everything from jujube trees to horseradish root to different types of potatoes that we eat on all winter, the ducks and the chickens that I use to cycle nutrients all back through this, plus they turn scraps into protein, which is actually pretty cool. And it's a way for the property to be an investment in my future instead of a cost sink like a normal house is. I'm not relying on the market for this to generate income. And when I say generate income, go pick up a pint of blueberries at the store. I can buy a blueberry bush for that amount of money, and I can plant it, and for 20 years, I'm getting 10 times, after like 5 years, 10 times of that pint off that one bush. That's a huge return on investment. It's very practical to me, the reason I do that. I like pears more than apples. I grow apples, but I've got all kind of varieties of apples and pawpaws and mulberries and all this other type stuff that I do. Plus, we do annual gardens where we grow corn. I use heirloom varieties like Silver Queen, and I grow heirloom tomatoes. Not because it's the trendy thing, just because I think they taste better. And we do a lot with those tomatoes, and I grow all our herbs. So whenever Cindy's cooking, she pretty much just says, I need, you know, some basil, oregano, and thyme, and I just go out the front door and pick it. So it's very convenient. And when I put one of those plants in, like a thyme plant, it's been there for 3 years. It costs about what a jar of thyme does at the store, and that thyme plant will keep expanding for decades. So it's a money saving thing to me. It's a practical thing to save to me. Plus, there's another aspect of the garden I really hadn't got into. I grow a lot of things in volume that I use in my lure business. I grow a lot of lovage. If you've ever looked at lovage oil, you might understand why. I grow a lot of catnip, cat mint, different types of mints. I can take there's a process that I use on my Jerusalem artichokes with the root of that that allows me to do some things in the lure. Now, guys, listen to what I'm saying. No matter how clever or smart or good friends you are, how I process these plants is in my lure business. I'm not going to get into that with anybody for any reasons. I spent a lot of time figuring stuff out, and I'm not going to do it. But that's part of the reason I'm so heavy in the garden. It's also part of my lure business. So when I grow these different plants and different things, and, you know, hopefully one day, because I'm really curious about some things, I'm hoping to have like an orchard of a lot of different things that are going to be unusual trees that grow unusual fruits, and I want to play around with beaver and muskrats and raccoons and gray fox and different things like that. Because, you know, if you live in West Virginia, where I got a bunch of seeds last year, I bet there's something you could do with those pawpaws that'll be outstanding. If you lived in Florida and you got wild mangoes everywhere, I bet if you were to spend some time and energy, and even if it took you 5 years to really figure something out to get it in a commercial state that you could sell that was stable, mango, one of the biggest problems in Florida is the raccoons come in because they can smell the mangoes from so far off, and they just destroy people's backyards. So I'm growing a lot of this stuff for my own food security, because I like being in a yard that I know is being productive and not being a money sink, just like a lawn and some boxwoods and a maple tree. It allows me to go eat fresh food whenever I want. I do a lot of my medicines out of the garden with herbs, with comfrey and lemon balm. Because I can tell you, if you have my personality and your brain is on hyperdrive a lot of the times, and you get thinking about an idea, you can't go to sleep. Well, if that's kind of mild, I can go make a tea out of lemon balm. And it's not like a sedative, not like a drug I would get from Walgreens or Rite Aid or something, but it just calms the mind down somehow and allows me to go to sleep if I'm wired up. And if that doesn't work, or I know that I'm really onto something, or I'm excited about something, passion fruit, the leaves off these will pretty much just knock your butt out. And it's not unhealthy. That's the thing about it. I know what's in it. It's water and leaves that I grow. So there's a lot of different reasons that I grow the garden, and I just enjoy it. And it has a therapeutic type effect on me, and it allows me to do things where I can be creative, because you're doing something a lot of times repetitive, and your brain can wander around, and I can listen to podcasts, and before you know it, I've come up with something that I can use in the business one way or the other. So that's what I'm doing with the garden, guys. So if you're going to go to Instagram, because somehow that's being linked to Facebook, you know, I only know what I know about computers, but there's a lot of trappers coming to it, and there's been a lot of comments, just almost confusion about it. But that is the Instagram account is for business, and it's for building a brand inside of permaculture, just to spread out my income like I've told everybody here to do, where it's not just dependent on one thing. Now, the nursery and stuff right now is going to be a very small part of the income. It's not going to be big. I'm not looking to be selling to stores or anything like that. Just local type stuff that I will be selling locally, but it's just an income stream that can be ramped up if needed. And I believe everybody out there, trapper or not, needs to be looking in their life this way, because it's just way more secure. And when you're more secure, you can make better decisions about your future. In the yard, you know, we've got 2 acres here. All this stuff that I'm growing and doing and hard structures and greenhouses and all that type stuff, it's all for the future. When I'm 65 years old and I want to eat a pear, and right now an Asian pear in a grocery store is about $150, what do you think they're going to be when I'm 65 and 20? They're going to be $10, $12, $13 a piece. I got a yard full of them. So I'm looking at what I'm doing for the long term, just like I make decisions in my business. It's always about the long term. It's not about the short term when it comes to the decisions that I'm making, because it just works out better in the long run. And I make better decisions if I think about the future. Okay, let's get into the, I was doing that for someone on Instagram that is a trapper that was kind of curious and asked me to talk about it, why I do it and stuff like that. It's all permaculture based. It's way beyond organic. Organic's been perverted by the government like they do everything else they do. And I feel like it's a good way to be a steward. It's a good thing. You know, I wish all land was sold on how many earthworms you could get out of a shovel when you put it in the ground. If we all did that, we'd have a lot healthier country and community that we live in. And it's just fun to me to see everything blow up and come to life and taste a lot of different things and have variety in my diet instead of what, because the only grocery store we have in Dunlap is Walmart. And their vegetables pretty much suck. So it allows me to do that. So let's get to the main topic of the show. Now, we talked about the pricing and all that last week. Now, where do you get customers for beaver control, if that's what you're looking to do? One, you've got to understand who your client is. You've got to understand the different clients you could have. You really need to pick and choose the clients you want to work for, because there's a huge difference. And depending on where you're at, you may or may not have that option. If you lived in, I don't know, I'll pick Columbus, Ohio, for example. You've got urban and you've got rural, and they're not that far apart. But what you're going to be doing in rural and who your client is very different than it is in urban. And when you get urban, are you talking about government agencies? Are you talking about homeowners associations? Are you talking about golf courses? All these have different aspects of who these are, and what I'm getting ready to say comes into play. To get started in the business, to build that social capital that we talked about last week, so you can leverage that over time to build a very permanent business, you got to know who your customers are, and you got to know where they meet or where they go, or what are they interested in. You know, a farmer goes to the farm meetings. He goes to the co-op. He goes to the feed store. He deals with the ag extension officer. He deals with, you know, maybe there's a guy in the local area that's been fixing people's tractors for years. I mean, there's all kind of different ways you can think of, and you may not be able to use all those, but you may be able to. Your job is to get in that circle of influence from that person that the farmers come in contact with. And that's going to be dependent on where you're at and who your customer is for that to really happen that way. So, like here in Tennessee, every farmer deals with the ag extension officer. They come out and do soil tests and check this and that and talk about grants and timber prices. And they do all kind of stuff. He knows every single farmer. You need to figure out a way for him to be your buddy. And in short of, and possibly find ways to stretch the lines on bribery if you need to. Take him out to dinner. If he likes football tickets, get him some football tickets. Do whatever you have to do. All businesses do that. You get inside that influence. So when someone comes up with a situation that you can help, you're the first person to pop in their mind. You know, at a local feed store, if there's a lot of beaver in the area, why couldn't you talk to the owner and on a Saturday evening or something, or Saturday morning, hold a class for the landowners that are having beaver problems and talk it over, show them how to set some 330, show them what to look for, show them the difference between new beaver sign and old beaver sign. You can set it up with pictures or whatever you need to do, and you get to know that and start becoming the expert in that area, in your local area. A local feed store or a co-op, it's not costing them anything. It's an added value to their customers. If 10 people show up and you get two jobs, that's money well spent, because it's going to build that social capital for you. So you need to do that. If you're in cities, that's something I haven't dealt a whole lot with. But if it's gated communities and stuff like that, you know, I'd be talking to real estate agents that deal with that. I would be talking to the landscapers that deal with those type places. Let them know what you do, you know. Call them once or twice, you know, every other month or so. Just check in with them. Don't harass them. Don't force them to try to do something. And don't make them think they owe you to do something. But you want to just be in that, just get in their mindset as if they go about. Now, this is what you call guerrilla marketing. It's free. You know, it's, you go put an ad in the local paper, which doesn't work anymore hardly, you know, in most areas of the country because no one's on there. You go to websites. You're just spending money, and it's like a hope and a prayer, and you're targeting everybody for just a few. Guerrilla marketing is where you figure creative ways to target a few a whole lot better and then generically targeting some. And you can see the difference when, if you look through a Trapper and Predator or Trapper's Post or Fur Fish and Game magazine, you see guys in there that put these little ads in there that's, you know, I'm Billy Bob's Trapping Supply, I've got your snares and lure, phone number, you know, and they'll have some type of tagline normally, like we only sell the best or whatever. Well, there's 100 of those in there, and no one pays any attention to any of them, but they're spending their money. Then you got guys that do very pointed ads in there, and it used to be the way that I used to do my ads. They were very specific. They would target a certain type trapper that's doing a certain type thing at a certain point of the year, and I would get results from that. But that just doesn't work the way that it used to. But you can even be smart if you're going to use more traditional type advertising. But you got to really think this out, guys. I mean, you really got to think it out. You know, it could be if you know somebody that is dealing, you know, you definitely need to know the game wardens if they're decent people in your area, which most of them are. Let them kind of know that you can help them out. You may, in a city, you may find out that there's some pest control people that don't have any clue about beaver, don't want to do anything about beaver. They get calls of beaver. Give them 20% for the lead fee. That's 80% you didn't have, and if you get greedy over the 10%, you don't deserve to be in business, and you won't be very long anyway. So give them 20% or so for the lead fee on a one-time basis, and let them kind of be your sales force for you, because they get calls all the time. Because people don't know what to do with beaver. They don't know what they're classified. They don't know anything like that. But wherever your customer is, you've got to really sit down and think about it. You've got to not think of yourself like you're a Walmart or a GE or Coca-Cola, and you're not having advertised budgets like that, because not everybody needs beaver control, and if you're smart about it, you're only going to target a few at a time anyway that may need your service, so you can really just grind down on those till you get some leads in there and kind of get in those circles. So go where they're at. Think about who they are. Think about, When I say it's guerrilla marketing, that's a term, and it really turned advertising up on its end. And there are several books that come out in the 80s and early 90s, and it was, you know, state-of-the-art stuff then that no one thought about, schools don't teach, and just different ways to get that out. But I will point out something to you if you're getting into business. Don't fall for the gimmicks, guys. A business card is a business card. Nobody's going to get a big hot Woody because you gave them a business card and it's got a picture on it. You know, it's not, to you it's important because it's personal to you. To them it's not. It's just another business card that they've got. Don't go crazy on expensive business cards. They just need to look nice. That's all they need to, you know, Vistaprint.com, I think you can get 100 for $9.99 free shipping. You know, you just need to let them know who you are. Something that's going to catch their attention with a picture of a beaver or something on there. You know, locally run business, if you're insured or you have to be bonded in your state or whatever. That type of information on there. It can be a color, not be a color. Don't get wrapped up around that. Don't be wasting your money on buying pens with your company name on it or giving out hats. And no one cares about that anymore. There's so much information being thrown at an American today that doesn't even register. They may pay attention because you're giving them something for free at the moment, but it's not like they're going to run back to that pen every day to look at it just to think about you. So don't waste your money on you know, different stuff like that. Really think about the money that you're going to spend on acquiring a customer, because getting the customer for the first time is the most expensive and the most hard. There's no relationship built up between you. once you get that relationship built and you do a good job for that customer and y'all know that neither one of you is going to screw each other, all of a sudden now you've got a salesperson for you. Very different than a lot of businesses are. Service businesses are based off word of mouth more than anything else, no matter how much money you pour into it. And that's going to become from relationships, not gimmicks. And when you're new in business, you've never been in business, you fall for all these little things, and it just sucks money away from you left and right and left and right and left and right. Putting a big wrap on your truck, it's probably going to get you keyed in most parts of the area. Like I've been keyed up in the Northeast when I've had signs on mine. It can get you some business. Not sure it's good if you pull in there and you know you got all kind of beavers and stuff on your vehicle and it looks like a rolling billboard, which sounds kind of cool, but it actually isn't. And you go into a nice closed neighborhood and you pull off the side of the road, there's going to be people in there that don't want you killing beaver, and they're going to cause a fuss, and it's just going to be problems. If you've got a plane vehicle that looks like any other plumbing vehicle or electrical vehicle or anything like that, no one really pays attention to those because they see them all the time, and you're not bringing attention to yourself. That's not the right place, in my opinion, to be bringing attention to yourself, is when you're pulled off the side of a ditch setting traps for beaver, because the nosy people in the neighborhood are going to be the one that's going to cause you issues. So that's something that can definitely save a lot of guys money. You know, one thing is that a lot of people have this false sense, and it's marketing. Everything about marketing is everybody falls for one way or another, or it wouldn't be done the way that it's being done. If you talk to a investment banker, he's going to be in a suit. Why is he in a suit? Because that's kind of what people expect him to be in. Now, to me, I don't trust people in suits. If a businessman is a businessman, putting on an overpriced suit because he failed in marketing does not impress me at all. It actually makes me a little more leery, because most people dress for success when they're not successful. And that means that person probably spends way more on clothes than he actually makes doing whatever he's doing, and it cuts in his budget so bad that he's not a very smart person to begin with, or she, so I don't trust him. Now, we're going to put this in a term that I see a lot of guys getting into control business fall for. If you've got the money and it does not hurt you in any way whatsoever, where if your income drops or whatever, that it doesn't matter to you one way or another, or you already have a nice vehicle, a nice truck, brand new truck, great big F-350, and we see them at conventions all the time with ADC guys. If that does not hurt you, I say go for it. Because a nice vehicle is nicer to drive than an older vehicle. It just is. It's a matter of fact. But if you're in a situation where you're getting started and you're hoping that you're going to make $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 this year, and you go get a $40,000 truck, guys, that is ignorance. And that's falling for marketing. And it's not going to work out very well for you, I promise you. The reason I bring this up, guys, I've had close personal friends go in crazy debt because they think if they don't have the latest and greatest truck, that customers are not going to trust them or believe what they do or anything else. They're not going to trust a trapper right off the bat anyway, because most people that have never been around one, they think you're going to show up in overalls, barefooted, crapping in their yard, and trying to kill their house cat for enjoyment. They don't understand what that is. Now, you can roll up in a nice truck, but everybody now's got nice trucks, so it doesn't really mean anything. And a nice truck doesn't have to be new, and it doesn't have to be something that's just crazy expensive. A 10-year-old nicely well-maintained truck will get the same response as a brand new one. But through marketing of you know, fake it till you make it and all this type of stuff, guys, that is marketing to get people to spend money. It's just like a starter home in a house. That is what every young person, or even my age, they think starter homes. If you put that on a balance sheet from the first house, putting in closing costs, and since you're only there for 5 years and you have real no equity in the house besides your down payment, because all the interest goes to the bank, then the maintenance, and you're going to buy another one, and you got more closing costs, and this, that, and the other. And when it's all said and done, you're going to be 65 years old with a high house payment, because at the end, when you're making less income for most people, you've got the high end of the house. It's no longer a starter home. And it's a debt cycle sales pitch is what it is, because numbers doesn't matter whether it's a truck for trapping or it is a starter home that people fall into day in and day out. Your grandparents did very well because they acted like your grandparents. There was never idea of a starter home. Now, if you have to move for a job or something, that's one thing. But to buy a $150,000 house, so in 3 years you can buy a $250,000 house, run those numbers, it is insane how much of your life is spent buying houses and how much does not go towards the principal. So it is really not an investment. Even at the end, if there's a $100,000 difference after two or three of these houses, you hadn't made any money. It's a scheme. It's a sales pitch. And the same thing about the new vehicles. You know, since I buy a lot of plants, what I'm seeing now is people on plants, on the description of what it is, on the water and stuff, they're marketing the plants for increased value of the home. Now, that can be the case or cannot be the case. But most people don't plan enough where it's going to make any difference anyway. So now they're making people get out of the guilt of buying an expensive tree for an existence, because they can justify that as it's going to make my house more valuable. When I was in the pool business, I never would use this because it was such a farce, but every single person, other company that I knew of that sold swimming pools, talked about the investment of the pool in their property. Well, when you look at the home values with a pool and the home values without a pool, it does go up, but it's way less than what you have to build the pool from scratch. So it's a net loss in the investment. But people would buy pools based on increasing the value of their property while they were losing money. And the same thing happens with trucks. The same thing happens with new guys that are getting into beaver work, and they got to have the best body grips, and they got to have hundreds of them because they're expecting everybody to burst their door down when they get started. In reality, that's just not the way it is. You got to guard your money from the beginning and really long-term think out what you need. If you get to the point in 2 years that you need all those extra traps, you can email or call F&T or Okie Cable and Trap or Alan Hoyt up in Connecticut, Alan Hewitt, and they'll have them to you in about 3 days. But if you're getting started in your business, your money and your mindset should be about acquiring customers, not about acquiring stuff. But there again, being American, and I'm guilty of this too, you think stuff's going to make something better. And stuff is just stuff. Clients are who gives you money, not the traps that's in your garage. And you've got to remember that as you go about doing all this stuff. Now, I want to go into something on beaver control, that if I were to be in beaver control now, because when I'm out there and I'm playing around with a duck pond, and I'm sitting out there for a couple hours trying to figure out how to do this plumbing and all this stuff that I'm doing anyway, and get it where Cindy thinks it's okay, I'm thinking about this show. And I keep going back to, if I truly believe, which I do, that you need to have many roots on income, which I do, that also counts inside of a business. Because if it's a one-trick pony, the pony can get sick. But if the pony can do more tricks, he's got chances to do better long term. So if I, me, right now, Clint Locklear, was going to get into the beaver business hardcore like I was 20 years ago, I would go about it drastically different. And this comes from experience, and this comes a little bit with maturity, and this comes where I understand that I can't let my beliefs of what I want to do as a business totally dictate what I'm trying to force on customers. So keep that in mind, and I know there's going to be some guys that's going to get a little upset about what I'm getting ready to say and say it's not trapping and all that. A beaver business, getting into beaver business by having different ways to generate income inside of that business, outside of just a trapper mindset, could be huge. One thing that I do right now with my coyotes is I've got clients that are within an hour and a half of me that I go set traps and let them check them. It saves me a lot of time. The clients that I do that with have been doing this now for a couple of years. It actually lets me make more money per day than it does per job, but it's more per day, which is more important to me than just gross anyway. So I go down, I set traps, they run them for me. They take care of the animals. At the beginning, I'd get a couple of calls. They weren't sure exactly if this was a coyote. I would take the time to go down there. We had it worked out. If I had to go back down there before I reset, that there'd be an extra fee and do that. I would be looking at a way, especially in rural, that you could come up with okay, Mr. Farmer, here's our two options. One is I'm going to set the traps, run the traps. By law, in most of America, it's basically on a 24-hour check. So I've got to be here every day. I'm burning fuel. I'm burning time. And just like you, you know, I can't do that stuff for free. So we've got two options here. One is I'm just the trapper. It's going to be more expensive because I'm going to have 4 hours a day over the next, you know, 6 to 10 days or whatever it's going to take to finish the job. I'm going to have X amount in fuel. I'm going to have X amount that I've got to have for the vehicle and the vehicle cost, just like you do for your tractor cost. I'm sure you understand that. I've got to do the insurance and all that. And I can't charge you as much per day just by the way that it is. But I've got a way that I can charge you a little bit more for a 1 or 2 day session. And then since you're already here, I will show you where the traps are at and how to get the animals out. And then you can discard the carcass. Don't worry about resetting the trap. I'm going to set enough of them where it's not going to matter. And then now I can, instead of charging you $1,500 for the 10 days, I can charge you $300 to come set these out in a day and show you where they're at. And if we still have problems at the end, I can reset again for another $300. So we might be able to get you almost a month of trapping, or close to a month of trapping, for $600 instead of $3,000. So that's a very creative way to structure a payment to a person. They're spending less money. They're actually going to get a better job done that way, because you're going to want to make sure that this works. So you're going to set more traps than you probably would, because you know that if you catch an animal, you're going to have to start, you know, really stacking runs and stuff like that. He gets a better service with a longer period of time, but you get to make more per day, because $300 a day over 10 days is $3,000. If you charge him $1,500 for 10 days, he's going to balk at the 15 because it's a lot of money. But if you could get $3,000 every 10 days by doing this, you're much better off. Now, it's not as fun as a trapper, but it's more business sense that you're going out and using your skill to generate income than it is just check traps. There's no money in checking traps. None whatsoever. So that's one way that I would definitely look at doing it, if it's legal and if it's possible where you're at. And you're going to have to make a judgment call on the person that you're dealing with. If they seem like a bonehead and they can't pay attention and they're distracted and they're scared of bugs and everything, not the best person to be doing this with. But in rural areas, most people aren't that way anyway. Their head's on a little more level. They're used to dealing with wildlife. They're used to being out in the woods. You know, they're not going to pee their pants if a snake, they see a green snake going across the road, stuff like that. So that's one of the things that I would do. The other things that I would get heavy into, and towards the end, before I kind of got into the coyote part really heavy, one of the things I was doing a lot of research on was ways to control the beaver without killing them. Now, that may seem counterproductive to a trapper. And if you're so dogmented on just killing beaver, keep the phrase in mind, your dogma is going to get run over by karma before it's over with. If a customer does not want you to kill beaver, and you just want to kill the beaver because you want to put him in a trap because that's what a trapper does, you're not going to have the money. Now, what does that do for your business? Absolutely nothing. And it's not going to build your social capital, because the way the world is now and it's all connected, that person is not going to be thinking very nicely of you. So when you go out to a person's place, you've got to kind of read what the person is. If they, and I'm going to use an extreme example. If they come out in Birkenstocks and dreadlocks, but they've got an apple orchard or something, and it's next to a creek, and they're the beaver eating the trees up, they're going to want to have a way, probably, unless they're just fed up and absolutely aggravated, or they're a country person that dresses that way because it's cool, to do a non-lethal thing. So a smart business owner in the beaver world is going to have a way to do that. And there's a lot of neat information that you can research from government studies down to YouTube on different ways to exclude beaver. And you're kind of getting to the realm where an urban trapper that does raccoon makes more money on the exclusion than he does the actual trapping. Which a lot of times will mean at the beginning you may get money for trapping and exclusion on a beaver job, which is very unique if you think about it, because very few people do this. They only have the trap mindset instead of the let's make some more money mindset. So if you find different ways, so if you, and I've had some places, and the reason that I started thinking about this is I've done a lot of work for duck hunters. Now, duck hunters don't want so many beaver that they're an issue and they really screw up their hunting. But they like the beaver there because they maintain the dams and you know, they keep water there, and if the water starts going down during a drought, they keep wallering out the runs till it holds water, and they, you know, they get it. They're amazing animals for ducks. And a duck hunter realizes that. When I'm working for the county, I started getting a few guys that wanted me to trap, but wanted me to give them the exact number of how many beaver were there, and I could only kill so many of them, because they wanted to have a few to maintain everything. Well, that's not very realistic, and they don't understand that you just can't look at a pond and go, there's two adult beavers, 2.5 young beavers, and the white picket fence over there. They don't believe that they think that you should be able to do that. And they were, when they didn't like that I couldn't give them a correct answer because I wasn't going to lie to them, then I was just going to have to guess on the catches when it started slowing down. If they wanted to keep some there, that's when I pull off. They started looking at different ways to do running pipes through the dams and having turnips and different things so the beaver couldn't get to it, and it flows on the bottom, and using wire. Some of them worked pretty decent, and some of them were a joke. I mean, you take a pipe and run it through a beaver dam in a small creek, the beaver just goes to the end of the pipe and builds another dam. I mean, that did not work. But some of the bigger water, you could run that water out towards the bottom 40 feet or so with a 6-inch schedule 40 PVC pipe and then have it way under the water and way away from the dam on the other side, and then let the beavers build back over, or you build their dam back with a backhoe. Eventually they'd figure out some way to screw it up, but you may get 2 or 3 years before they figure that out. And it was, some of it worked, some of it didn't. And there's been a lot of money made for cities and states, and there's been some people take some government work away from the USDA because they had non-lethal ways, if needed, to exclude beaver from a place. and they get a lot more money than a trapper would for trapping the beaver. So if you had 10 jobs and half were trapping and half were doing this, you're going to be way better off at the end. But you're going to have to figure out if that's even something that you're interested in doing. And at the beginning, most trappers are going to say they're not interested in doing it. Think about your business before you make a decision. Think about long term. Because you may have to get a couple of helpers. You may have to figure out how much a backhoe costs if you got to dig something out or you're going to do it by hand, how much the pipe costs. You're going to have to do a lot of research on different methods to exclude beaver from trees or anything else, or from water, or from building up dams higher than they need to be. All kind of different things like that. And you're going to have to know enough about all those situations before you start talking about it to a customer, before you throw him a price. And you need to be able to price that where it's worth your time to do that type of manual labor. And most people will spend way more money to save a beaver than not. You could be the specialist in your area that traps live beaver with cages and the clam traps and all that type stuff. You're still trapping, you're still getting paid. If that gives you an edge over your competition and you give the customer the option of, I can do it for this, but the beaver aren't going to be breathing when they leave, or you might be able to get away with snares in some areas, or we got this price, most people they have animal guilt, just like a lot of people have white guilt about black people. And if they have animal guilt, they will pay three times as much for you to catch the same beaver with the same energy to be able to relocate them. Now, check your laws before you do that. You know, make sure it's good and you don't get in trouble for it. But keep that in mind. That option needs to be there. So your business can be a trapper. It can be something that excludes. And it could be somebody that specializes in live trap and removal. You could work with organizations that want to keep animals alive that could get you a lot of customers. You know, there's going to be conflicts with that, no doubt, but that's just part of business, and you got to be a big enough man to understand that business is business, and you keep personal out of it sometimes because it doesn't really matter in the big scheme of things. It could be one of the things that I got so tickled at years ago. In Cleveland, there's a very wealthy guy, the guy that owns the check and the cash. You see on TV, you know, the check and the cash and that the aggravating little ding thing that goes on. Well, he paid for basically a big green walking track all around Cleveland for his employees to walk, and they did immaculate landscape. I mean, this guy's very wealthy. And they planted all of these neat willow trees and maple trees and Bradford pear trees and bushes and this, that, and the other. Well, right in front of his office, there was, I bet, 80 trees that were mature when they put in, which probably put them in the $300 range. Within a week, there wasn't a single tree standing, and he was going epileptic. Now, if you're a smart business guy and you see something like that starting to happen, you need to find out who the decision maker is on that project or the funding manager is on that project. And go in and meet them, introduce yourself. Just say, look, I do beaver trapping, I do beaver removal, and I do beaver exclusion. Where y'all are doing this work at, the landscaping you're going to put in is not going to last very long. And I understand that if you've never been around beaver, you're probably not going to believe that. But I wanted to introduce myself and give you a way to contact me. So if you see this and you start losing thousands of dollars, we can remedy this through many different solutions that my company does, from lethal to non-lethal, so you don't lose all the landscaping that you're putting in. Now, what I saw, because I knew somebody that worked there, they replanted those trees. And there was somebody that went out, and it was like $100 a piece, which I don't think you're going to pull off for most people. but to put a wire ring around the trees and stake it down at the bottom with the rebar, because I went over and looked at them. It wasn't heavy duty wire. It wasn't like rebar wire or something like that. It was just basic, you know, 14 gauge galvanized, like you see at Tractor Supply. Made a ring 4 foot high around that and charged $100 a piece when they put all those trees back in. He probably did it in a day and a half, banked $3,000 or $4,000 and went about his business. Well, if they didn't want to trap the beaver, which they didn't at first, this would have gave them an option. Now, and I remember, because when I found out the beaver caused them issues, I did contact them and I gave them what I considered a very reasonable price for the aggravation of me having to do this in downtown Cleveland, Tennessee. Somebody else north of there was going to charge like $20 a beaver to do that. And it became clear when they contacted me that the guy didn't really know that much about trapping, but he did a little bit of trapping, and he was just doing things that you can't do in the middle of a city like that. And it was causing a lot of issues, so the trapping thing got nixed. And when I told him, when I went in there and it gave him my price, I said, this is the price, unless another trapper goes in front of me, then it doubles. Because if I got to fix yours and somebody else's problem, then it's going to take more time and it's going to cause a lot more expensive and aggravation. This is the other cost. Well, to him, he took that as an insult, so I didn't get that job and I was fine with it. But that exclusion was pretty cool, just wrapping wire around there. Now, what if we took that a step further, guys? What if we really started thinking creative about a beaver business where it could generate a lot of money? What if, and this is all things that if I got back in the beaver business, this is what I would be doing personally. So this isn't like just throwing crap off a wall here. I've actually put a lot of thought into this. What if we, when we talked to customers, they knew that we could also consultate them on their stream, the banks, erosion, and different things like that. Which means if you've never looked at anything like that, or if it was a farmer and he had in flooded areas, ways that he could keep the good sediment that comes off during a flood on his property by using one of your services, because you're also a stream consultant. You don't have to have a degree to be a consultant. You just have to be good at what you do. And the people that say you got to have a degree, let them deal with the what happens when they go get a non-expert that says he's an expert because he's got a degree. Your reputation will overtake someone with a degree in short order if you do a good job. And the reason I say this, because you're dealing with a lot more professional type clients that would need something like this. So if you're doing stream consultation, okay, you've got beaver that's in the water. What type of fish is in here? What does what do they need to be happy and healthy, if that's a concern to the landowner? I've done work for the state of Tennessee several years trapping beaver out of a section that comes out of the mountain and only goes about 2.5 miles, because the beaver would build dams, raise the water temperature, and there's this little bitty snail that's like the size of the lead out of a lead pencil, and it's about 1/4 inches long, that when the temperature of the water got warm, they couldn't reproduce, and there's only one or two places in the world this snail existed. So what I'm saying is actually real world, because I've already done this. And I got paid to go in and trap beaver. Then I went in and tore out some of the dams as I went to get the water flow. They were testing the water, this, that, and the other. And then I went in with them on the back end of that and was going, well, if we could open this area up, this wouldn't be such a quick place for a beaver to build a dam. It wouldn't make it so easy for them. And that was also part of what I was doing with them. And they came in and planted a bunch of trees behind me and different things like that. And that when I got to talk to the guys that were doing the stream restoration, they were making like 50 times more money than I was. And they went where the banks were being eroded on the side. They would put bales of straw with chicken wire or heavier wire if it was a lot of current. And they would pin that up against the bank so the water couldn't beat the dirt off. Because it was way too rural to be bringing in riprap and stuff like that. And they planted these trees that were stakes. And I didn't know what they were at the time. And since then I've learned what they are. There's nurseries that sell what they call tree sticks that are willow and yellow and red dogwoods. And when you get them, they're dormant. And they got root hormone already on the bottom. And it looks like honey also. And you just get this big bundle and you go down the creek bank, which is normally already soft, and you just start sticking those things in the creek bank. Well, as soon as they come out of dormancy with the root stimulator, there's no roots on there when you start. Well, you go back in 7-8 months, you've got a 6-foot tree. Because if you're using something like willow, it's basically a weed. Well, these guys were getting paid, I think it was $45 a tree. They had less than a dollar in each one of the trees. And they had maybe 10 seconds apiece by sticking them in the ground. I don't know what they charged on the erosion part of that, but you could take that even further. And this is where, if you're interested in doing something like that, I would definitely look into permaculture. Because you can use the flow of the water to do a lot of different things. And I'm not going to go into all that today because it'd be just too confusing if you've never looked into that. But there's so many things that you can do with waterways, which with the EPA the way it is and the way people want to have good streams and clear water and all that, which is great. You can build a business around that with the beaver work where you're in the same niche. And you can really be rocking and rolling when you go about doing that. So if I was in the beaver work today, guys, it would be lethal and non-lethal trapping. It would be different ways of exclusion from dams and culverts and stuff and trees with the wire, simple as that is. And then there would also be stream consultation where I can go in after I trap the beaver, I can plant your trees for this much apiece, and I can do erosion control, plus consult you on if we need to move some stuff around in there so the beaver can't get a hold so quick and cause so much damage. And all those are extra fees on top of extra fees on top of extra fees. Now you're in a business that most people dream about being in as far as income goes. So I'm going to leave that at that. Now I want to finish the show with the simplest and easiest way to get customers today. And guys, that's a web. That's the web. If you're going to be, I don't use a computer, I don't like the computer, all like that, you ain't going to be in business very long in today's world, especially starting up. If you're a startup and you've got that mindset, you need to go apply for a job somewhere because you're not going to be in business very long. That's not being mean, that's just being truthful. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick on Chris. Chris is in Texas. And he actually transcribed some of my radio shows that I'll be flooding the internet with here before long. And he's got a link that's on his email, and it goes to trappingintexas.com. And I want to kind of go through this website, and he told me to be brutally honest. He gave me his permission to do this. And if you're building a website, the purpose of the website has to be in mind when you build the website. Having a brochure with your smiley choppers up there holding a beaver and, you know, weed trap and this, that, is useless. It's useless. That's the reason most people's websites never get in traction, because nobody finds them unless they have the web address. So if you're going to do the website, you've got to understand what the website is for. The website has to be for when people Google questions, they find your website. The perception from that is that you know what you're talking about, and you're in their area, and you're willing to help them. most ADC websites that if you go look them up, or I'm Billy Bob the Beaver Trapper, and I hope there's nobody out there that's got that. Billy Bob the Beaver Trapper, I'm the best trapper in the state. I catch this, look at my pictures, look how great I am, yada, yada, yada. For one, that's a turnoff to the customer. It's clear you're not there to help, you're there to brag. It's an ego site, not a website for commerce. But that's the way most people do, because that's the way in the trapping industry, most people, if you're going to sell lures and you don't catch any animals, it's kind of tough. So they try to convert that over to customers where killing a lot of animals and stacking them up like cordwood is disturbing. Your thoughts on that are irrelevant as the business owner. You've got to think about the customer. Think about an average farmer's wife that's going to Google a question because her apple orchard's getting chewed on, or rose bushes down next to the picnic area is getting chewed on, and she's going to Google that, and there's a guy there with 65 truckloads with 100 beaver apiece. Impressive to a trapper, it's a turnoff to the customer. So what do we want the website to do? You first thing is you got to think about your domain, which is what's your www, this in this case is trappingintexas.com. Chris, beautiful. Kudos 100% on your domain. I'm willing to bet Texas Trapping is probably already taken, or Texas Predator Control is already taken. So you got creative in how you mix that around. Trapping in Texas, according to Google, is the same thing as Texas Trapping. Trapping in Texas, Texas Coyote Trapping. Being that being the name in the domain really helps you in your Google search, is how people find you. It's a clean cut looking website. It's good. And I haven't really looked at it. Yeah, it's WordPress, which is free, guys. And if you're gonna do these real serious, I would get a premium WordPress. Just put in premium, see, how do they word that on Google? Premium theme, a premium WordPress theme, and hit enter, and you'll have different companies and you can see what they do. The reason I like the premium themes better than the standard WordPress is they're a lot more secure. Because if anti start beating up on you on a regular WordPress, a lot of times they can get into it. So that's one of the reasons, and you have more options in the premium. But if you're just getting started and you don't know that much about computers, roll with the first one, and then it didn't cost you anything. So you could build a site like this for, if you have a 15-year-old kid helping you, probably a pizza and $20. So it's not that expensive. It's clean cut. He's got a raccoon at the top and a dog-proof trap. Which, being in Texas, feeders, corn prices, high protein, that's good. He's got a bobcat on the other side. He's holding it. He's not looking like a tobacco-spitting, barefooted hillbilly over here, so that's good. And at the very top, where when you first come down from his logo, which is Trapping in Texas, and the Texas logo type thing with the state, red, white, and blue, and the star, you got Predator Control Texas style. I love the Texas style part because people in Texas like Texas style, and everybody else's style to them is below them. So that's pretty smart. Then underneath these two pictures is the information on trapping coyotes and other predators in Central Texas. And he goes through here, and I want to read some of this. Welcome to Trapping in Texas. We specialize in helping our clients in and around Williamson County, Texas. That Williamson County, Texas, if someone plugs into Google, trapper in Williamson County, Texas, coyote control in Williamson County, Texas, this, that, and the other, that's going to be very important. If there's a city that's in that, if you got two or three cities inside of Williamson County, Texas, I would also, Chris, put those with a comma in front of that Texas. So Google has something to read this. Now I'm going to geek out on you a little bit on this. WordPress, one reason that they're so good is they're in HTML code. Now, if you're not a computer guy, it makes no sense to you. If you're dealing with a web designer, you're getting one made, under no circumstances whatsoever, on the first page of your website, you've got a bunch of Flash videos, PHP code, and Java code. If you don't know what that is, write it down, stick it in a drawer, and hand it to your web guy and go, these are not allowed. HTML code is all that's allowed on the first page of the website. That's about the only thing Google can read. Google can't read pictures. It can't read Flash videos. It can't read any of that. It can't read your header. It can't read anything but basic HTML code. So that's what you want to have on the site. We control animals that damage property where the trapping cows is needed or bobcat removal is in order of the day. Many people are plagued by damage causing wild animals. Left unmanaged, nature can call. And this goes out. And he's got a one thing I would change on here, Chris, is you got our MO. I would put our mission statement or something like that. First time I saw that, I thought it was saying Missouri. And when I looked at it two or three times, you want it to be very clear to your customer what this is. The landowner is the boss. We leave the land exactly as we found it. We close the gate. So if hogs are tearing up your ground or if cows and bobcats are killing your stock, give us a call. Do you want more deer and turkey on your lease? Now, when you're trying to do one of these websites and someone is looking at that, all that is great. The word stock, I know it means livestock. And in a state like Texas, you may get away with that. That's not something I would use somewhere else. I would put very specifically in here, are coyotes and bobcats, are they killing your cows, your horses, your sheep, your goats, your deer, your turkeys, your quail? That's not for the landowner. That's not for the user that's reading the website. That's for Google. So if someone types in how to get rid of coyotes in Texas that are eating quail, you've got a lot better chance using search engine optimization. Again, geeking out a little bit, but you're using that to hit harder with Google to get more people to find you. Instead of saying stock, which is a generic term, you could put stock, then cows, then deer. And you may want to put that in two or three different sentences, because you don't want it to be hard for the end user to read. And you have, so if hogs are tearing up your property, well, think about what someone's going to type into Google, guys, if you're thinking about hogs. You've got hogs, you've got wild hogs, you've got pigs, you've got feral pigs. And when you're doing something on the hog, you need to use every one of those things a person would type into Google. When you're thinking about the wordage, when you're thinking about coyotes and cats and stuff like that, think trap, catch, remove, kill. All those words are words that people type into Google. And you can get into Google Analytics, go find your college student, he'll show you how to do it, and you'll find out more of these terms are used than others. And then that way you can stack your website with these words that Google can work. Your goal is to get the customer here. And then you got to sell the customer. But if you can't get there, you're not going to be able to sell it. We trap with snares, footholds, and live traps. There again, think about your wordage. Snare traps, which is actually what they call them in Texas. Foot traps, you may want to have leg hole traps, live traps, also box traps, cage traps, stuff like that. Think about your search engine. Want some tips of getting rid of a single animal? That getting rid of is very good, or a single coyote, that's very good. But since you're putting that in that sentence, I'd add bobcats, raccoons, nest predators, stuff like that in there also. Many times learning just how to trap coyotes or how to trap bobcats is all someone needs. Now see, to a trapper, that makes a lot of sense, Chris. To a landowner, that's not, that doesn't, I mean, is that a course? Is that a video? Is that a book? Is that going to YouTube? Is that what? We give personal one-on-one instructions to meet your need on your property. I'm making this up as we go, so you can control the animals that are causing you damage. You know, let them know what you mean by that instead of learning just how to trap. To a trapper, it makes sense. To a homeowner, it does not. We'll respond with whatever we can do to help that we can see. We will respond with whatever help we can offer. Enjoy the site and I hope you find that information useful. Here's some information on hogs. Click here to see trapping videos. Videos are good. Think about the wordage you use on those. And also on these pictures, guys, think about the wording you title these things so they can be found on Google. They have a blog. And this is the most important thing on a website that hardly anybody wants to do in the trapping industry, is you've got to put up posts at least once a week until you get hundreds and hundreds of them up there, or Google's not going to think that you're very serious about this. And if you're not serious about this, they're not going to be serious about your website, which means they're not going to trust that the customer is going to find it serious and they don't want to put it out there. So you're going to have a blog about us and reader story. The only other thing I would have, now the reader stories, I'm going to click on this. Okay, that is more just like someone else that wants to do hogs or coyotes send in stories. What you really need on here is every time you get done with a client, ask them for a comment on how your business did. If you did them a good job, they'll give you a very good comment. It's not the right word, but y'all know what I'm talking about, like a review. And then you can stack those up on a page. So if a customer, or what customers are saying about us, they can go to that page. You know, he didn't tear up my fields. He did a good job. You know, it was less expensive than I thought. It was, you know, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. We don't have any more problems. The next one, kind of the same, and kind of the same. Great service, all that down through there. And the reason I say you need to have something like that is in today's world, that's how people decide who they use, is through reviews. So you need to probably have that on the page. The blog, there's a lot of posts on there. There's a lot of pictures. If you're going to be doing a blog, minimum 300 words with a picture or a video that you put up on YouTube. To keep costs down, put them on YouTube, embed them into your website. You get double doses out of people finding them that way. But the biggest thing is, remember what you're wanting to do with this is first get Google to recognize it. Second, sell the customer on what you're doing. You know, if you tell stories about problems people have, what you could do about it, and then the results when it's over with, those are great. You can also have like a little news feed. You know, there's 65 million hogs in Texas. They're doing this. The problem it is this. Here's a link on a resource of where I got this information with a picture of a hog tearing up somebody's field. Coyotes eat so many deer fawns. Here's a link to a study that's done on it. You know, if you're trying to raise deer, something to think about. You know, 300 words that way. And all of a sudden now, you just keep stacking content all the way down through here. Keep your personality involved in whatever it is you're doing. And the reason I say that, every trapper that's listening to this is unique in one way or another. You're either more humorous, or you're more serious, or you're more relaxed, or you're more service orientated, or you're more trap orientated, or whatever it is. Whatever you are, it needs to come through this website. So they get a kind of an idea of your personality and stay true. And the only reason I'm bringing that up, what you do not want to do, if you catch yourself doing this, you need to go out to your car, put your hand in the door and slam the door on your hand so you'll never do it again. Do not try to make your website look like a generic Fortune 500 tells you nothing, excites you in no way, and gives you no real information website. It's got to have personality with stories and pictures. You got to lead people down a path. And the end of that path is you need to use our service without me telling you you need to use our service. And that's what you're trying to do from the web, because no one uses a phone book anymore. If you do, you're an abnormal person in today's society. To make you a bad person or you're wrong, it's abnormal. I don't use the phone book anymore. My wife doesn't use the phone book. None of her sisters use the phone book. Everybody I ask, no one uses the phone book anymore. They use the internet and they use words with a question. And if something that's localized, like a ADC business is going to be, it needs to be localized that area. Well, if they have nicknames for your area, it needs to be in your website. If you got main cities, it needs to be in your website. If it's got major highways, it needs to be in your website. If it's got local tourist attraction, it needs to be in your website. Whatever people think about your area needs to be with the other content about your business so they can find you, because they're going to put a question in. You know, Sequatchie Valley, where I live, is not a real thing. It's Sequatchie County. It's Bledsoe County. But everybody calls it the Sequatchie Valley. So if I was going to do Sequatchie County beaver control here, I would use Sequatchie Valley a lot, because the locals here, which would be my customers, are going to think, oh, who does it in Sequatchie Valley? So that's the way that I'm going to go about it. Really think about your words. Don't turn it into an ego brochure, because it's not going to help you. And guys, think about finding different ways in a beaver control business that you can generate income, build a bigger base, and have a better business based off that bigger base. And really good things start happening with it, because it'll expand you into things you would never get to with just solely trapping. So I hope this show has helped. And Chris, I appreciate you letting me talk about your website. One thing that I would definitely do, let me go back to your homepage. Let's see. Okay, you've got your categories, which are good. I would look at a tag cloud. Some people say it helps, some people say it don't. From my personal experience, it definitely does. I would definitely get a picture or two up here of coyotes. I would, even if you had to pull them offline, I would find some pictures with a coyote eating a deer. You want to draw emotion into a website like this. So if someone's, you know, like, do coyotes eat deer in Texas? And you pose that question in a blog, and you've got pictures of coyotes eating deer in Texas. Well, that kind of, no matter what you say, those pictures are going to do more for you. But I would definitely have a coyote up here on the homepage. If you're going to get more into hogs, I would definitely have hogs causing problems and different things like that on your landing page. And your homepage, it should be more for Google and to get people to go to different links on your website. A lot of different reasons for that, and I'm not going to geek out on everybody on that. But your main landing page is for Google. Go to Wolfer Nation. You'll see that front page. It kind of makes sense to read. It kind of doesn't. That's for Google, not for people going to the website. And then when they hit one of those links, now they're in somewhere they want to be, and it's more for them. So kind of keep that in mind when you're doing this type of stuff. And guys, if you want to get in the beaver business, get in the beaver business. It's always booming. There's money to be made out there, whether it's part-time or full-time or just to get deer hunting permission or fur trapping, whatever you want to do, go get it. Be smart about it. Think about it long-term. And if you do that and you put in the work, And you use the gray matter between your brains, being a successful business in today's world where most people don't and most people are only looking out for themselves, it's not hard to stand above the crowd. So don't dream about it. Just go do it.